Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to the weekend following Thanksgiving, but I think maybe more important right now, the first day of December. That means you only have 24 days to get out there and get all those Christmas presents. So anyway, welcome to the program this evening, and here we are in my home at the right down in the middle of the heart of the Texas Medical Center in Houston, Texas. And you can look behind me and see all those wonderful hospitals back there from the Methodist Hospital, Texas Children's Hospital. And I work on the 10th floor of that one right over there, Baylor College of Medicine and the Pavilion for Women. And doesn't look like there's too much traffic going on out there. The Texans play right across the street here at the NRG Stadium, and they won today. So that's just awesome for them against the Jaguars. But it's just great. I hope and pray that you had a fantastic Thanksgiving. And now that we are entering into we just survived Black Friday, although I'm still getting, I don't know if you are too, but my phone is just exploding with, I guess, Black Sunday, because they're extending all of these sales. And then tomorrow we're going to get hammered with Cyber Monday sales, and that'll probably last a week. And then we'll get those super sales in the middle of December and all the way through the best sell of the year about the third week of December. And it just seems like all it does is take our focus off what it's all about, Christmas. What it's all about is the true gift. What the season really, really means to each and every one of us, if you're a believer. And sometimes things happen that causes us to get off center, out of focus, out of the lane that we're supposed to be driving in. And when it does that, we sometimes blame everything else. You know, I'm so busy, I can't get anything done. I don't know if anybody else experiences that or not, but I think some of the times the devil's tool is to keep us busy so we can really stay unfocused on what our purpose is in life and how we should be able to zero in. Because if you take that a laser light, laser pointed with no fragments on it, in it, can actually pierce through metal. But if you start fragmenting that light out, it just causes the room to be illuminated. It takes all the power away. And sometimes that does that to our own lives. And it reminded me of a story that I finally found it in a book. And I want to read this to you as we start off, and then we're going to tell you how to get into involved in the program this evening and how to call in if you want to. But there's a story that I think I really want to. And it was on a chilly January morning, just inside, and this is a true story, the entrance to a Washington, D.C. subway station. And listen to this. A young man took his violin out of his case, and he brought it up to his shoulder. He was dressed in just regular clothes, jeans, and a t-shirt. And although he had faced many people that might find attractive, on this particular morning, he was mostly obscured with a dark baseball cap on, and he had shaggy brown hair that he didn't comb very well that morning. After plucking the strings a couple minutes to tune his instrument on the violin, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a few dollar bills and scattered them in his violin case that was sitting out in front of him at the entrance of the Washington, D.C. subway station. Hoping that just a few passerbys would be able to notice that he's collecting money as he plays and would throw in change or a dollar or two. It was a busy morning in the subway that morning. The young man started playing, and thousands of people you can imagine in that subway station that morning were busy hurrying to work, school, or whatever they had on their mind that very morning. And they were headed, and they were going fast. Trains were coming and going, and the morning rush was in full swing. Yet through all the busyness, the incredible sound of this young man's violin filled the subway station. It was impossible to ignore. Or was it? Over the course of the next 43 minutes, and you can actually get on YouTube and see this online because they videotaped it when he did it live. More than 1,000 people walked through the doors of the subway entrance where Joshua Bell was playing. And if he had been any other street performer, perhaps it would have been insignificant that he earned attention from only a few of those thousands of people that passed by. And he only earned just a handful of change. But Joshua Bell isn't just an ordinary street performer. He is possibly the world's most renowned violinist. And he was playing on one of the most beautiful, difficult, classical masterpieces ever composed. And that masterpiece that he was playing in that train station that morning, he was playing on a $3 million violin that emitted one of the purest, most eloquent sounds in the world. Yet everybody passed him by. Why? Because people were too busy hurrying to pause to notice where the music was coming from and who it was coming from. Later on that evening, people would be paying $500 to $700 a ticket to hear him in the best music hall playing the music that he plays on the violin that people would wait in line hours for. But because of busyness, because of being hurried, because of being out of focus, they literally walked past him like he was just an ordinary musician on the street begging for money. Another street player. Another person asking to interrupt our day. Busyness sometimes takes us out of focus of what we are in line to be able to do. We need to make an effort this season to be fully aware of what this season is all about, what's going on in our present moment at the time, without wishing that it were any better or any different. I miss so many sunrises and sunsets, and I can see them right around these windows that go all the way around my penthouse, that I can see them every morning and every evening. And sometimes I'm too busy to stop and pause and see the beauty in creation. The next few weeks, you're going to be busy on Amazon. You're going to be busy on Macy's site. You're going to be busy running into Walmart and picking up presents and wrapping them and throwing them at people and throwing them in the trunk of the car and going and rushing to the houses and putting them out and hoping that they didn't have something in the sweater fit or whatever it is. But let me tell you what, that is just as bad, if not worse, than walking past a classical musician of Joshua Bell and just walking past him and not recognizing that we are hearing from a master in his instrument. This Christmas is a master. This Christmas is a creation that was only created one time, thousands of years ago, but it's still impacting our world today, that we still, even atheists, take the day off from work on Christmas because of that one classical moment of the greatest music ever played through a gift of Jesus Christ into this season. We can't take focus off our busyness a few moments to notice what it's all about. We really, really should. Appreciating each positive experience in your week this week, without holding on so tightly that when things change, we get bitter and not better. Accepting even negative experiences to allow it to make us better people. Even when I'm playing the piano here and I hit a wrong note, every now and then it's like, wait, what's that right chord? And when you play the wrong chord, sometimes it causes the harmony to be off. But all you have to do is readjust, refocus, realign, and everything comes back to perfect harmony. And then this season, eliminate all that unnecessary noise that's going on around you. All that static, all that stuff that distracts us from the focus that we're meant to be on. And then applying all the full energy and attention into the present moment. Make your true Christmas present to the people that you love with giving them 100% of your presence, of who you are. Don't spend Christmas like this. Oh, hi, how are you? Merry Christmas. And then looking down at your phone. Put the thing down, turn it off, leave it in your car. Don't take it to the dining room table. Don't take it to around the tree when you're passing out the presents, unless you're taking pictures with it. And I know a lot of people do. But take the focus off the stuff and put it on the significance in its family, its love, its friendships, its relationships. It's what we are here on this earth for. I hope you got something out of that. That's kind of what I want to just throw at you on this first day of December. Just say, hey, keep focused. Keep your eyes blinded of what the world throws at you. Okay? And focus on what the season is all about. And I promise it's going to be deeper and more meaningful. And you'll stop and enjoy the music from the master. And it'll be the most beautiful song you've ever heard. Tonight we have a great guest that's written a beautiful book. And she happens to be a musician too. And you can get involved tonight several different ways. You can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page right now if you want and watch it there, and you can comment there, or you can get on the phone like this and text me at 832-396-6525. And yes, that's my personal text phone. And you can just text me right there with a question. And then during the commercial break, I'll read them and then I'll come back on and read those to the guest. Or you can call right into the radio station at the wonderful radio voice of all the staff there at 888-627-6008. And they will patch you through live, because right now we are completely being heard all the way around the world. Isn't technology beautiful? Tell you what, tonight we have a guest, Marcia Peck, and she is all the way up in probably the coldest part of our country right now. We're going to find out here just shortly. Marcia, come on in. She is a writer. She is the author of a beautiful book, and you're going to see her face here just in a second. And she has received all kinds of awards from New Millennium Writings. from Tamarack Awards, Lake Superior Writers Conference, the Glimmer Train, Flashquake, the Minnesota Artist Mini Stories, and these lists. If I read all the awards she got, it's about this long. But she has written a book that I'm going to have her show to us here just shortly, called Water Music, A Cape Cod Story. So I want to welcome to the program this evening, Marcia Peck. Marcia, come on in. How are you this evening?
Thank you so much for having me, Gregory. This is an honor.
Well, it's our honor. And the cover of the book is beautiful. You happen to have that in front of you?
I
Just show
do.
that. Look at this. And you
There
got
it
an
oh,
award sticker
of
on, several award stickers.
course.
You know, I've written three books and I haven't won anything.
Oh.
Doggone it. Well, wonderful. So, Water Music. Why that title? Where did you
Oh.
come up with that? Because it automatically draws you in, especially if you're a lover of music like I am. But why water music?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. It was so important to me to have that title. And as you know, not every writer gets to choose a title. And my publisher said, agreed to have that title, but also wanted a subtitle because there are other books, as well as the famous Handel music called Water Music. For me, it was very important. The narrator of the book is 11-year-old Lily. She's about to turn 12, and her family is spending the summer camped out on a salt pond on Cape Cod. And she's so the Cape Cod, I fell in love with Cape Cod as a child myself. And this landscape of the book is the water, the sea around her. And the music is her inner landscape. I see the music as this narrator's inner landscape, like me. And she's learning the cello at a young age. People who know me might think that there are some autobiographical things in the novel, and certainly there are elements that I do take from the people I knew and what conflicts and problems they were facing back in the 50s. This takes place in 1956.
So, music, obviously being a cellist, the character in the book has music that she is involved with herself, that gives her an inner type of peace. You said an inner landscape. Is that what you used?
Yes, she's facing a complicated family dilemma with her parents and the extended family that is also camped across this salt pond from hers. And her quest that summer is to capture her mother's love and attention. And her mother is very much troubled by family finances, by the competition between Lily's father and his brother across the pond, and very, very troubling situation that the two families are facing. And Lily's mother, it's the 50s, so she doesn't have a lot of agency to effect change in their finances. And Lily is in the prologue, her mother is described at Lily's describes her mother as being like a teacup turned upside down on the saucer and spilled out, and she isn't able to right herself that summer. And so this presents quite a problem for this 11-year-old, almost 12-year-old.
Do you find in life, because I truly believe when any writer writes, and you obviously have written not only this book, but a lot of stories, correct, for a lot of different magazines and short stories and lots of things. I think writers end up writing what they are aware of, what they're familiar of, what they're are accustomed to seeing or knowing. So when I talk about, like at the very beginning, being busy and being off center, this story about this young girl, could it be that the moms and the dad and the trauma that's going on inside the family concept and the family unit takes them off center of paying attention to this young lady?
Absolutely true. It's a complicated family, and that's not always bad because there's goodness in all of them. They're just each one is facing his own demons, his or her own demons, and trying their best to work it out. Things go very wrong for them. Each chapter is introduced by a number on the Beaufort scale. I don't know if your listeners know the Beaufort scale. Sailors, if they're sailors, they do. It was a 19th century way of calculating the speed of wind for the British Admiralty, when they were at sea and they didn't have instruments to tell them exactly, well, it's 10 knots or 20, 40 knots. And so, in order to trim their sails, they learned to visually look at the foam on the waves or the way the flag flew and moved, and to calculate the speed of the wind so that they could trim their sails. So, each of the chapters begins with a number on the Beaufort scale, moving through to very stormy, and I found them when I was starting to write the book. I just happened upon this scale, and the descriptions were so utterly charming to me. One was certain, I don't know, 20 knots, umbrellas difficult to control. So there were these charming descriptions.
So
And
when,
it helps us
so
move through the
is this
story.
scale basically showing the reader what kind of stress level, what kind of storm level that the young lady's going through, that's
Exactly,
going to be dealing with
exactly,
in that chapter?
exactly.
What a neat concept. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's neat, because it kind of lets everybody know, hey, this is going to, it's going to start, it's building up. It's getting ready
Yes.
to, yeah,
Yeah.
beautiful, beautiful.
That was the summer that 1956 was the summer that the Andrea Doria went down, sank. And there was something about that's also happens during the course of the book. And there's something about that that touched me very deeply. It was a very young ship, but it had only been crossing the ocean for about 2 years, and to its aid, the more matronly Île-de-France, who had been in service since right after World War I, came to her aid. And there's a scene where the Île-de-France points its searchlight onto the Andrea Doria to help in survivors. And there was something about that that touched me very deeply. It felt like a tether that connected this young ship with the mother, a more experienced ship. And in that image, I saw something of the relationship between Lily and her mother. And it's a very fragile tether. It's just no more than a beam of light, but effective in its way.
Marcia, without going into deep personal roots here, how much of you is in this story? Because this is a novel, this is
Yes.
fiction.
Yes.
How much do I get to find out about you reading this book?
Well, when I When I started reading, let me back up a little bit and say that I did not consider myself a writer. I'm a musician, and I've been very lucky to have a long, wonderful career with a symphony. And somewhere along the line, I began to keep a journal. It was when my daughter was born, and soon that led to other things. I thought I was writing, when I started this, I thought I was writing a short story. Then it kind of grew, and I thought, well, maybe this is a couple of connected short stories. And then I finally had to face the music. No, this wants to be a novel, and you're going to have to buckle down and go the distance. So probably from my journal keeping, I did experience some introspection about my own life and growing up, and what music has meant to me. And when I was a young child in growing up, I practicing the cello wasn't always fun. It was hard work sometimes, but I had the most wonderful cello teacher. He was about 100 years old, or so he seemed to me. And after every lesson, he would do a trick. And sometimes it was nothing more than some kind of bird call he would make. But he was just so inspiring and so memorable. So I did include him in or his doppelganger in the book.
So there's people that you know personally that you've made kind of characters that had some of their personalities in it to kind
Yes,
of let
I
that.
certainly did explore personalities of people that I knew. They didn't always do the same things or come to the same
Right.
conclusions, but yes, it's a way of looking for something real in the characters.
With a book like this, I have a feeling, I've just my third book's just getting ready to come out in January, I believe. Hopefully it'll be January 1st, if we get it printed in time. It took me maybe 6 months to write it. I have a feeling that this book took you a long time because it's almost like your life wrapped up, even though you didn't sit down and start writing it. But it was writing itself in this journal. Is that right? And then it started kind of being created into what this story is.
I think that's very perceptive, yes. And it's sometimes hard to face the troubles that you and your family went through, or it's hard to come to it's hard to process all those things and revisit difficulties within a family.
Well, Marcia, in those days, did the post-World War II days era, we didn't get a chance to process because it was told what happens in this house stays in this house and just do it because I said so, and nothing's talked about. We're going to keep this and put it underneath the rug. So if there was turmoil, if there was waves in our family's life, we didn't have the option like we do now. Hey, let's get online and get some counseling. Let's talk about it with a safe chat room. You pretty well went to your room and dealt with it. You didn't have a chance to talk it about because it wasn't allowed to.
So true. And Lily spends a lot of time with her cello, kind of evading all those
And
questions.
that's where I'm going with. We're going to take a commercial break because on the other side of this, I want to tap into Lily and that instrument and find out how that heartstring is not just playing an instrument, it's becoming part of you and releasing through that. Because I believe a piano, a violin, a cello, all of those, anybody that plays music, I want to find out, Marcia, your insight on that. And you being with the symphony, I want to find out more about that too. You probably know more than most people do about the impact and the importance of what music can do on somebody's life. And we're going to drill down right in the center of that on the other side of this commercial break. Hang with us. We'll be back in about a minute and 20 seconds. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Alrighty, welcome back. We have an unbelievable author with us today, Marcia Peck, that has written a beautiful book, novel, called Water Music, A Cape Cod Story. And Marcia, if you would, hold that back up. I want everybody to see the cover of this book. You can get this on Amazon right now. And there it is. And is that an actual picture or is that an artist painting?
This is an artist painting. I was so lucky to have a friend, a wonderful photographer and artist, Tom Middlebrook, do the cover. I just love the cover.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
To me, it emphasizes the journey of a almost 12-year-old from the relative safety of a small salt pond as the water that makes its way out to the open ocean eventually. And that's her journey as well. She's learning to get by in a bigger world.
How much does music impact when you are, because apparently you are a master at your cello and you're in a symphony. Are you still doing symphony work now?
That's very kind. I just retired from the Minnesota Orchestra. I have so many friends in the Houston Symphony, too.
Oh, really?
I sure do. And on the music faculty at Rice as well. I still play in a music festival in the Tetons in the summer. So that's my go-to heart place.
And how many years was you in the Minneapolis Symphony?
Well, I don't know if I should admit, it's been 50 years.
Wow, what an honor.
I've been so lucky.
Yeah,
and
that's
beautiful.
And I love
that story about
Marsh
Joshua
University
Bell.
It's just a few blocks right over there. just right on the other side of the medical center. That's great.
Wow.
Unbelievable. When a musician feels music, I don't think a good musician, if they don't feel it, they're not a very good musician, because that, to me, that's what music's all about. It's about the emotion of what it can do. What does that do, and how does that play in your life and in the life of Lily? And how did that become an important part of her? Was it a venue for her to be able to filter through the stress, the anxiety, the trauma, the doubts, the fears? Did that become a tool that she resorted to?
Definitely. She finds a lot of comfort in her cello, even though it's hard, and she doesn't love practicing. She's, I would say, I don't know how gifted she is, but she's but she, but her father really wants her to play the cello, and he chose the instrument. He said because she had long fingers. So, while she's missing her mother's attention, she gets a lot from her father. Music, for me has been, oh, it's been my whole life. I've been so lucky to be in a wonderful orchestra where you're sometimes when everything is cooking and you're playing, you're immersed in a Shostakovich symphony or Rachmaninoff or something. Some fabulous pianist is playing a concerto, and you feel like you're just hanging on for dear life, that this big thing is moving inevitably along, and there's 100 people all hanging on to this train, and I can't tell you how exciting it is. It's just a thrill, an absolute thrill every time.
Well, you know, I'm getting excited because when you start talking about symphony and orchestra and 100 people and everybody on the same page playing the same, don't they're in the same measure and watching that conductor. Out of the 50 years that you had done this with the symphony, what's that one moment that was the most grandiose moment of going, I will never forget playing with this guest pianist, this guest trumpet, whatever. What moment was that in your entire career that you would say, hey, wait, that was the moment of my musical career right there?
Oh gosh. Can I choose one? There were it feels like there were 1,000, and Joshua Bell comes right to
So
mind.
you knew exactly who I was. You've heard that story before.
I have heard that story before, and he is every bit what he's cracked up to be. He's just sensational. I can remember playing Beethoven's Ninth in the church in Soweto, where Nelson Mandela. What I mean, there have been moments like that that have just bring tears to your eyes. They're bigger than life.
Yeah, I think those. I got to sing with some symphonies in my college days, but I never got to play because I was a pianist, but I majored in music in college, but I always added my own runs with Beethoven and Bach, and the piano teacher, you would hit me on the back of the head, said, "You play it the way it's written," and I always said, "Anybody can play it the way it's written," because I never took real lessons; I taught myself, and so I had to drop that music major and become a business major, but that was completely different. But just to be on that music, the impact of music in my life, and I know yours, is just in the top three things of my life that has kept me somewhat sane because there's so much peace in music.
There have been moments when I feel like I'm so overwhelmed by the music that the music is writing me.
Oh.
I'm not playing the music anymore. It's playing me. I don't know how else to explain it.
So when you started to put pen to paper and you titled this, and they took your title, Water Music, so you're tapping into Lily and her life and how it integrates and is affected by or influenced with music and how that has played a part of her ability to be able to handle the storms and the scales of turbulent days. And was music always her resort, her retreat?
I think that's true. I think that music for her is the gift that keeps giving. She finds something there that blossoms in her heart.
You know, I don't think some people know the impact of what powerful music is. I literally go to my office every morning early, early, and I will put on something on Pandora, and then I'll put on YouTube on my computer, Nisim Dora, and listen to that, and I let that cycle through over and over and over. That's how I start my day. And that impact of hearing Luciano or someone like that sing it, I always like different versions of it, lifts me up. It empowers me because I can tackle, after listening to that three or four times, I can take on the world. Music has that kind of power to give us the encouragement that we never thought we would have. It fuels my tank.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I know that it fuels my writing, and that I'm always looking. I read my work aloud a lot. I might have read this book 10 times out loud as I was working on it over the years, just to hear the music in it,
Yeah.
to hear the music in the language, and the rhythm of where a phrase or a sentence or a chapter is going, and where it meets its high point, and then if that makes any sense at all. I
Did you lay it out like a writer of music could pull out that musical scale and play it out as the orchestra did, where okay, it's going to peak here, it's going to crescendo here, it's going to climax here. I mean, did you have all that kind of like that in the book to where it was like a symphony?
I hope that it achieves some of that, but I couldn't draw it out. I couldn't see that in the beginning.
Yeah.
I needed to let the music inform me, as to where it needed to go, wanted to go. And then,
Okay,
of
so
course,
go ahead, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
and then of course at then you in draft 7 or 12 or whatever, then you see, oh, that didn't work, and it needs this tweak or.
When you mentioned at early ages you didn't like to practice, when did music become a piece of you in your room? Playing the cello and you being Lily in the story, was there a lot of similarities of you doing that and falling into that moment in time of, hey, I'm going to absorb myself in music, close my bedroom door and just play. Did that happen to
Yeah.
you as in at a young age, or did it take several years, college age, or when and if that happened to you?
I have no doubt that it does happen to many musicians at a young age. It didn't, I would say I was not among them. For me, it took a long time well, for one thing, to have enough technique. To be able to forget technique when you're making music, but to really fall in love with the music. I think, and to study any instrument at any age is just a thrill, and is brings a richness to my life that I can't imagine life without it.
I can't either. Do you think it's a lost art? Do you think as the years move on, it's become something that used to be everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people played the piano, a lot of people played the violin, a lot of people was in band and those kind of things in grade school. And it seems like now it's kind of fading over the last several decades.
I know what you mean. It used to be that everyone had a piano in the parlor, right?
Yeah.
Or some kind of organ or something like that. And we did study clarinet or this or that in middle school or grammar school. It's a real shame that not everyone participates in some way. I guess we can all sing. That doesn't cost anything,
Yeah.
right? It's not just the discipline, it's the taking you out of yourself, and
Oh.
that's so important.
Yeah, and even finding music that takes you to a different place, because music and emotion go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
If you separate the other, if one, you don't have the other. If you take emotion out of music, it's just notes. But when you put, that's why I love like Broadway and I love opera, because they're up there just belting it and they're feeling it and they're sweating and they're crying.
Yes.
And it's just that emotion. You don't get that
Yeah.
with some of the stuff that's out there today. And it's just, that's what it's all about for me. Just feeling what it can do for you, lift you up.
I so agree. And there's something about it being intangible that it requires us to imagine and to participate in an intangible way that makes it so powerful, I think.
When you finally had this book published and it's out where people can buy it now, what do you want people to receive after they're done with this? Go, they close it up and they go, wow. What do you want the next phrase to be? That did this to me. What impact do you want this story of Lily to have on other people that read it?
We can overcome, we can over everybody can overcome great hardship and conflict. That we all have this miracle within us that can lead us to a better life.
And your family, when they saw this, when they read it and they go, oh, whoa, you're writing a book. Did you have a lot of support from them in this and different ideas of what it ought to be and what they were expecting?
Well, I have two sisters, and one of them said, "You left me out." My family's been very supportive, and even the peripheral characters from the that might identify in some way with other character with some of the characters, even they have told me, you found something true about everybody. So I took that as a huge, huge compliment.
Why Cape Cod? Why not Lake Mead? Why not some other water? Why did you a Cape Cod story? Why did
Well,
you choose that?
apart from that, I just love Cape Cod, and I can smell, as I sit here, even in 5-degree Minnesota, I can
Oh
smell that
my.
salt air. But there's something fragile about Cape Cod, that it's this little thin peninsula that's off in the cold Atlantic Sea, and it's connected to the mainland by just At that summer, it was just one fragile bridge that again led me to that image of the tether, that this is a delicate and a dangerous place to be. And yeah, it just, the image felt very much like the world of the Lily's world.
So you're that fragileness, that delicateness, that tether represents so many people today. So this would be a book that would be an excellent Christmas present for people that could be dealing with things without people being too intrusive. Hey, we know you have problems here, read the book, but they could probably gather some insight from Lily's life that they could actually apply to themselves.
Wow. I think you're right. I think you're right. There's something about these are the holidays, and that's a summer holiday in which things get magnified, right? Our problems and our troubles and our joys all seem bigger than normal.
And don't you think we can be, even though we think we have the tiger by the tail and the world is, I'm hanging on and I got it all coming around me. At any given time, one phone call, one visit, one letter, one act tomorrow at the office can bring you right back to that fragile world of,
So
hey,
true.
I'm hanging on by a string now. And
Wow.
what am I going to lean into?
Wow. Yes, so true.
And Lily shows us how to cope with that,
She
how to deal with those stormy days.
finds her way. Yeah.
And that's what we all need to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll tell you
What a
what.
pleasure to talk to you.
No, it's my joy. Hold up the book one more time.
Okay.
We want to make sure people get a chance to write this down. This would be an awesome gift with people that love to read. Water Music, A Cape Cod Story. Marcia, what type of book would you say, if people are listening right now, if we have millions of people around the world that could be listening, that you say, hey, wait, if you like this book, you're going to like mine. What type of author, what type of book that's really popular that people go, oh, yeah, I love that book, that you would say, hey, if you like that book, you're going to love Water Music. What a couple books would that be like?
Well, people have compared it to A Glass Castle.
Okay.
It's an older book. There's an older book called The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy. I loved that book, and I'm sure that influenced me somewhat in writing this. What else? I'm having trouble.
No, that's fine. The God of Small Things is a good book. That is kind of older though, isn't it? Yeah.
It's been around for a while.
Is there any adventure in this book?
Oh yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. There's a fledgling love and some sea adventures that don't always work out. And basically, it's a family story. It's
Yeah.
it's
And one more question before we let you go. Do you have another book in you?
I'm working on another book. Someone asked me if I had a sequel to this one, and that's percolating. But the book I'm working on, and I'm have been working on for some time, is a book about a stolen cello, a cello that was made in 1708 in Milan and has made its way to an orchestra in this country. And it's also it's kind of a love story. There's some mystery to it, but it's also a love story.
You have a title for this one when it could be coming out?
I don't want to say it because I'm not sure it's the right title,
Yeah.
but I find my inspiration for the new book's title in T.S. Eliot. There's something in the four his four quartets poems that I think might make a good title.
I tell you, writing can be addictive. And I've always been a huge advocate on this program. Every week we talk about the importance of journaling and the significance and the impact, even though it not only helps us internally and emotionally, but it can create you that have become an unbelievable award-winning writer for years with all of these accolades and now with this novel. So I applaud you and thank you. Keep up the great work. And thank you for spending an hour with us this evening, all the way up from Minnesota at 5 degrees.
Yes,
Well, I hope you're
honestly.
warm. I hope your heaters work.
This has been such a pleasure. Thank you
Well,
so
Marcia, my
much.
joy, and thank you. Anytime you want to come on, let me know. And especially when this new book comes out, let us know. We'll have you on. We'll find out who took the cello and where is it at now. Thank you so much, and you have an
Thank
awesome
you.
holiday season.
Same to you. All the best to you and to your listeners.
Thank you. Water, Music, A Cape Cod Story by Marcia P. Peck, PECK. You type in Marcia, MARCIA Peck in Amazon search right now. That book's going to come up and you can find out all about her, all about the book, and then you can do the all important, I want to buy it now, boom. And you can do it in several different versions that you can get it in. I think this on Kindle. Is that true also, Marcia?
Yes, it's on Kindle and the audiobook will be out in February.
Oh, are you doing the speaking?
I wish. No, I have a much better speaker than I.
I want to do my audio book. That'll be fun. Okay, so that's coming out in
You'd be
February.
great at it.
Oh, that'd be great with music between chapters, some good background music. That's
Oh,
going to
what
be
a great
powerful.
idea. Great idea.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Marcia, for being with us. Like
Thank
we
you.
each do each and every week, I always want to let you know that before we go, the last few seconds of the program, no matter what you're going to deal with before you go to bed tonight, no matter what you're dealing with right now, no matter if this was the worst or the best Thanksgiving week that you've ever had, I want to let you know, no matter what, there's always hope. No matter what your scale is on, that's controlling and letting us know what the winds are and the turbulent seas are being controlled by and how powerful the winds are or not, there's always hope. Never give up on the hope. And if you need somebody to talk to, need somebody to chat with, text me, let me know, and I'll be glad to give you some time and we'll talk it out. Water, Music, A Cape Cod Story. Don't miss that book. Get it tonight. We'll see you next week for another live edition you will not want to miss next week. Dave Pelzer is going to be here next week, the author of the international bestseller, A Child Called It. It will be an unbelievable program. And eight other books that he has written. And he's going to talk about his latest book. Plus, we're going to go back into the Child Called It book. I promise you that. And we're going to find out more about that. And we will be doing that live from Las Vegas next week. So don't miss that. And it's going to be an awesome program. Join us right here for another edition of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams next week. Have an awesome week. God bless and enjoy your week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.